What's that sound? That's the sound of Downy Unstoppable scent beads going into your washing machine and giving your clothes freshness that lasts all day long. There it is again. It's like music to your ears, or more like music to your nose. That freshness is irresistible. Let's get a Downy Unstoppables bottle shake. And now a sniff solo. Nice. Get 6 times longer lasting freshness plus odor protection with Downy Unstoppables in wash scent beads.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Molly and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now in the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're the man, and we've been discussing this morning the idea that the Bears, well, they blew it. They took the wrong quarterback. They got the they didn't get C.J. Stroud. They got the Bryant Young of 2020. No, we didn't say that. But it was interesting to see how good Jaden Daniels looked last night, and he put together what will go down as the greatest ever performance by a rookie quarterback in terms of completion percentage ever in the history of forever, in the history of the sport known as gridiron. And pretty astounding to see how easy it is for him. They seem to have the right coordinator, maybe even the right head coach, all things that were available to the Bears. What are your conclusions after three games of this season?
Yeah, Jaden Daniels played really well last night. Kind of a bizarre game. I don't believe either side punted. Joe Burrow played, you know, pretty well himself too. But Daniels completing what 91% of his passes in the game, and guys, he's at 80.3% for the season. Now that Cincinnati defense, I think everybody's seen, has got some issues to it. But that was a road game. I mean, really impressive. He certainly has some guys at the skill positions, but it's not like Washington is loaded there. No one's going to look at that offensive line and say, hey, that's a great offensive line. But he's off to a nice start. I wouldn't waste my time passing judgment on Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams at this point. It's so early for both those guys, and reality is they both flashed, because Caleb played well in Indianapolis, all things considered.
So, Brad, the Bears are conducting Zoom teleconferences the day after games. So on Monday, we heard from Matt Eberflus via Zoom, so you don't pick up on some other cues maybe to see his overall demeanor and the way he handled things. But a day later, was he any less tolerant of what he saw against the Colts? Was he less encouraged? I think that was the word that he used after coming from the locker room Sunday. What was your overall impression of the way that Matt Eberflus presented himself on Monday?
Yeah, I think they've realized they've got to be better running the football. They just have to be better running the football. That, you know, recall back to the previous week down in Houston, and he was like, he thought they had run it okay. And you're looking like, really? Were we watching the same game here, man? And there's none of that coming out of this game. And they kind of keep harping on execution. Well, you know, eventually you're going to get to that old, what was it, John McKay line, when he was the longtime USC head coach, was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, and when he was asked about the execution of his team, he said he was in favor of it. So eventually that's going to happen here if these guys don't start running better. getting better blocking up front, and everybody doing a better job in the run game. It's not just the line. It's not just the backs. It's a total team effort.
So we're trying to remember Cliff Kingsbury. He was, of course, Caleb's quarterback coach in college. Did he get an interview? I know that there was an informational interview with him about Caleb, but was he in the running for the offensive coordinator? He was.
Yeah, they interviewed Cliff Kingsbury for the offensive coordinator job, but Poles and Eberflus were jetting all over the place to interview people for the OC job.
And Clint Kubiak, was he in that mix?
Yeah, that's the guy. If you're looking at it right now, like, well, geez, who did they not hire that maybe would be doing a better job than Shane Waldron right now?
There's two Clint guys Kubiak. Right there that's, that you could point to pretty quickly, Brad. That's a pretty good list.
Yeah, like what? And Cliff Kingsbury, I know when that name came out, I think a lot of people poo-pooed it. And yeah, he's done a pretty good job thus far. I mean, it's super early. We're 3 games in. But they talked to him about the Bears' job, and then obviously we're able to do some fact-gathering in terms of Caleb Williams, because Cliff had spent the one season with Lincoln Riley there at USC, working with the offense, obviously. So, yeah, they talked to a ton of people. There might have been 10 guys that they talked to, perhaps even a few more. I don't know. It was like the list just kept going on and on and on and on. Waldron was one of the first guys that they spoke to. And, they got to get things going. They are, they've got 3 points in the first quarter this season, which ties them with this Sunday's opponent, the L.A. Rams, for second worst in the league. The Philadelphia Eagles, believe it or not, have not scored in the first quarter this season. Although, with that, I'm going to bring some positive news. The Bears have scored 30 points in the fourth quarter, which is number one in the NFL. Who would have thought that after, like, after you watched them so far, would you say, hey, Ben, these guys have... Yeah, they've scored some in the fourth quarter, but you go look at it, and nobody scored more points in the fourth quarter than the Bears.
You're just a ray of sunshine this morning. That's very wonderful. Optimistic look at it, Biggsy. Glass half full, as usual. While we're playing this game of going back and reconsidering things that didn't happen.
Let's go.
Dan Quinn was also a finalist when Matt Eberflus got the job. Jim Caldwell, Dan Quinn, and Matt Eberflus. Flusie got the job over those three, but Quinn was somebody who was considered, passed over. I know he may be technically pulled out, but didn't he want the job?
Yeah, he was the Cowboys defensive coordinator at the time, and I would think that he would have wanted the job if the Bears would have wanted him. There, you know, everybody knows what happened in his first run as a head coach in Atlanta, and if that Super Bowl ends a little bit differently. His tenure there probably goes differently, but you won't come across a guy or many guys anyway in the league that are more revered and respected than Dan Quinn. Like, I don't know that I've ever encountered someone that's got a bad word to say about him. Like, that's how he treats people. And when I say people, I mean players. I mean coaches that he works with, staff members in the building, people on other teams. Like, he's an exceptional guy and took it. That is a challenging job he took in Washington, right? When you consider everything that's gone on there for 25, 30 years and the state of the roster and all that. And it'll be interesting to see if they can get it going there, because every time you think the Commanders have maybe taken a step forward or two, you know, you wait a little while and it turns out they're right back where they've always been. But they've got new ownership, new leadership, and Dan Quinn's the man there. But there are a lot of people pull for a guy like Dan Quinn, I'll tell you that much.
So, Brad, the Rams come into town. We know that Sean McVay out in L.A. said that Cooper Kupp's ankle will not allow him to play in Chicago. He will not be a part of that game. We know that Puka Nacua is on injured reserve. He will be unable to play. So we know that that you got the head coach, you got the quarterback, the receiving corps is beaten up, and they're coming off a victory over an equally injured San Francisco 49ers team. What do you think of them coming to Chicago, and they finally got off the snide with their first win of the season against the Niners?
Yeah, that's a really beat-up football team right now, guys. They've got
three offensive linemen down, right?
Yeah, they've got offensive linemen down. They've got their top two wide receivers are hurt. They've got, I think, some defensive linemen are down. Like, they've got this kind of injured reserve situation that you look at and say, well, that looks like a team that's pretty beat up in the first week of December, right? And, yep. And we're still in September. So they're in a tough spot there, but that's a really well-coached team, right? And you have to respect what they can get done. The Bears have had a tough time against the Rams when they have had to play in L.A. recently, but that game will be here, and we'll see. It's just it's hard to get a close read, I think, on a team like that has so many key players out. But Stafford's playing at a high level, even with his receivers that are missing right now. And Kyren Williams has been a productive back. If the Bears can do a better job of stopping the run than they did this past week, perhaps they can get after Stafford a little bit.
Their leading receiver was Tutu Atwell. 4 catches, 93 yards against the 49ers.
Yeah, pretty... Louisville. I think he's a Louisville guy,
yes,
isn't he?
He's a like Louisville guy. Good memory, Brad.
A lot of speed and quickness.
Yeah, they have a pretty pedestrian receiving core, though. But with Matt Stafford and Sean McVay, you don't underestimate anybody. And the Bears certainly are not in a position to do that. Brad, let's look at the offensive line for the Bears, though. We talked earlier whether or not Nate Davis was benched or it was injury-related because he wasn't able to practice. What do you think they do this week? Do they stick with Matt Pryor at right guard, and does it matter?
Oh, boy. Well, it all matters as poorly as they've been playing on the O-line. Although, I got information that Pryor was going to start on Saturday. I think it was Saturday.
Yep, nice job.
And I put it on Twitter. And, the reaction, you thought the people were assuming the Bears were putting a Pro Bowl guy in there in Matt Pryor, and I'm not knocking him, but there's a reason a guy like that's on a one-year deal for a little less than $1.2 million. So we've got a question at right guard. I'm not positive he's the solution, but I think they need to evaluate how he played. I know he gave up one sack, I believe, in the game, and determine who's better. And then where's Nate in terms of his health? Like, is the groin better? Is that still an issue? They need to get Bates back there sooner rather than later to be able to see him. They need Larry Borum healthy. They need their guys healthy so they can truly have some more options there. But they've got to be better across the board. It's just it's been really poor.
I'm curious, the Nate Davis...
And the guys, the Rams are getting trampled in terms of run defense.
Well,
we've heard that before.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I know.
Two of the speed option left.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, 5.1 yards a carry is what they're giving up.
The Bears can fix that.
Right down at the bottom. Mm.
The Bears will come to the rescue.
I know.
Does the Nate Davis, is it a groin injury? Is it preventing him from practicing? And are they now at a point where they don't want him to play unless he practices? What is going on with him?
He was limited in practice.
Yeah,
he was limited in practice last week. And then, but it wasn't to a point that he couldn't go out there, because you saw they had a choice there, right? Brian Amagaji was active for the first time, so he had a uniform on. And when Braxton Jones went down and was in the medical tent with that knee issue, what they did was they took Matt Pryor, who's one of the nice things about him is he can play just about anywhere on that line, and they moved him to left tackle, and Nate Davis came in the game at right guard. So he was healthy enough to be in there. He's probably just not 100%. So they chose that route instead of taking the rookie third-round pick and saying, hey, we're on the road. You didn't play any preseason. Go get him and good luck.
So, Brad, being the voice of reason and guy who is plugged in, help us add some context, or how do you answer the question? Maybe you'll get it in the mailbag this week, of how Chicago should view Justin Fields starting 3-0 with the Steelers and why he looks like a better quarterback when he is wearing that black helmet.
Yeah, I probably need to talk to some people about that. I've seen clips and stuff. I haven't watched every Steelers game, but he's eliminating some of the turnovers, right? And they've been in some low-scoring games, and they've come out on top. But I don't know that he's playing great when you really get into it. But a 3-0 start with Russell Wilson being the other option, if they keep playing good football, you have to have complete faith that that Mike Tomlin will stick with Fields and he'll continue to be the guy for the Steelers.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think there's so many, fun storylines to look at and all that, but all anybody really cares about is when they're going to kind of get their act together a little bit. Is there anything that they can do to help Fields throw fewer passes, be more effective and how he's used? It's one thing to come out and say, well, we don't want to take the aggression out of him, but you got to protect the ball. And it's another thing to actually do things to help him. I mean, would lining up at the line of scrimmage and trying to run the football help? They have an identity. The identity is throwing the ball pretty much every time that they have a chance to.
Yeah, I think I mentioned yesterday, like, it wasn't quite as lopsided as it's normally going to be when you see a QB with 50-plus pass attempts, because they had so many offensive plays, right? They had 84 offensive plays, so I think there were 27 handoffs. But they certainly need to be more balanced. And hopefully with some of that balance will come some more explosive plays, because they didn't as much as they threw the ball, they didn't throw it as well as they needed to, right? They didn't have enough points. They didn't have enough yardage. But, guys, dropping back and slinging it 50 times is a recipe for losing. When you look, this is just since 2015, quarterbacks with 50-plus passing attempts in a non-overtime game, 23 wins, 141 losses.
Wow.
So your winning percentage right there is a cool 14%. So it's even worse than the White Sox.
Wow.
Okay.
Whoa.
Now, the other thing here is the Bears were slinging it in a close football game, right? That thing was not a blowout. Sometimes you see the quarterback's got a ton of passing attempts because the team's trying to play catch up. 41 of those losses, 25% of them were for teams that lost by 14 or more points. That wasn't the case here. So the Bears were in the game. They had to keep throwing it because they couldn't run it at all. And the reality is they need to be better throwing it too. If you're going to complete that many passes, attempt that many, you need more yardage, but even more importantly, you need more points. And a big chunk of the production came, or a sizable portion, was the 42 yard Hail Mary to DJ Moore.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years. Estwing.com. Thank you, Biggsy.
Great
Thank
stuff,
you,
Brad.
Buddy.
Yep.
Great stuff.
Have a great day, guys.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs, the football man from the Chicago Tribune. We've got Brett Bielema joining us next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Play fake for the corner. It's Bryant. It's touchdown. Barry Loney's play calling tonight, Devin, has been extraordinary. And Altmaier has executed to perfection. Assistant coach. Now it's the ball game. Blitz right up the gut. Rayola's down. Illinois pulls it off. A huge upset. Dylan Rosiak, the Mike linebacker, shoots through to make the stop.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. That was the end of it. That was the 31-24 victory in overtime over Nebraska. We are delighted to welcome in the man who led it, the architect of victory. He is Brett Bielema with the University of Illinois, ILLINI, and it just keeps getting better. Good morning, Coach. How you holding up?
I'm good, Mully. Thank you. Getting ready to get out to practice here in about an hour, so we're excited to get into our Penn State prep.
Boy, early practice. You guys practice this early all the time?
It's interesting. When I was head coach at Wisconsin, Arkansas, really every place I'd ever been, we'd done afternoon practices. We always fought with a class schedule and college and everything. So when I went to the NFL, most NFL teams practice, in that 7 to 10, 7 to 11 a.m. window, because your body is the most prepared, less conflicts, and just a better way to attack the day. So I took that when we started here, and it's really been paying off. We have very few, I would say, at Illinois, we have no class conflicts because class always takes priority. But we really, it's the best way for us to practice here at Illinois for sure.
Well, practice makes perfect, and you guys are perfect. It's been so much fun to watch. I think Kansas was 19 at the time, Nebraska 22nd. Now you guys are 19, and you're going into Happy Valley. Penn State is number 9 in the country. Your reward for the great upset victory is a top 10 team. It just doesn't get any easier, especially in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think one of the exciting parts of our conference, really of college football right now, is just the ever-changing world. And now to have 18 teams in our conference for us at Illinois, we play obviously this game at Penn State. We have a game a couple weeks later that we're going to Oregon. We have a 100-year anniversary game right here in our own stadium against Michigan. So it's kind of an unprecedented time, which is kind of the world we live in today, and it's a lot of fun.
You're ready for prime time. Certainly the audience for Friday night's game in Nebraska, I think, was 4 million viewers, which really was great for ratings in college football in your program, Coach. And now I think that you look at Saturday's game against Penn State, it's going to be another nationally televised game. I think it's the NBC game. You have risen to the occasion. Your offense has been very, very efficient and explosive. Luke Altmaier is a big reason why. How big of a step has he taken this season so far?
David, it's been fun. For me as a head coach to watch your players grow and kind of just, expand what they've done in the past. And I know you're a former DB, so you know where I'm coming from. Like, as a quarterback, his presence, his awareness, his knowledge before the snap has really allowed him to play faster when the ball is in play. We always say volume reflects confidence. He speaks with great volume, but also his actions, with just an unbelievable level of confidence. And I know he's looking forward to the big stage and an opportunity to go play at Penn State. And, it's going to be a late night game, and it's going to be a crowd that probably is all dressed in white and are very excited. So we're excited about this opportunity ourselves.
Yeah, it really has been fun to watch from a distance. The Nebraska game was just fantastic. That is a very difficult place to play. I don't think Penn State is going to be any worse than that. You go in there and they're going crazy, and it was amazing to see your team answer every time a question arose. And, when you're in games like that as kind of just a fan watching, you wonder, wow, how long can they keep doing this? How long can you keep up with them? And good God, it was phenomenal the way that that game went back and forth. And then when you get to overtime, man, it took you virtually no time at all to score a touchdown. And then I think they were facing a 3rd and 45 or something, 3rd and 43. I mean, you want a team in 3rd and 43 is my understanding.
Yeah, we were excited to get over there. You know, actually, at Illinois, we've won, I believe, our last three trips over there to Lincoln. We won 2 years ago, and then to win this past Saturday, or this past Friday, I should say, is a really great opportunity. And I think that's probably the way our guys are playing into it. Obviously, everybody knows the name Olin Cruz, right? A phenomenal Bear and a guy in the Chicago sports market. Well, his son, Josh Cruz, is our starting center, and he got up and gave a preseason talk just about playing with an edge and playing with a demeanor that is relentless. And I think literally our whole football team took that over. We talked last week about packing our tough, smart, dependable edge, right? Like, we were going on a road trip to Lincoln. We all needed to pack our bags, and they packed that edge and they played with it. It's just been I think this team is a lot of fun to be around. Obviously, we're playing Saturday against Penn State, but I told our guys all the time, right, man, you've been preparing to play Penn State since January when we got together, right? Like, it's just that doesn't happen in a week. You put in a lot of great work, and hopefully the things that we've been preparing for and talking about are going to play out this weekend.
Well, Josh Cruz has helped you win the line of scrimmage battle offensively. I think you got a lot of guys who are doing that defensively, because that's where it starts, Coach, as you know. I saw Taylor Edwards. There's a clip circulating around social media of him splitting a double team, and it is a thing of beauty, because that's the way you coach it. That's the way you want to see it. And I heard him referred to yesterday as one of the more unselfish players in your program. What is it about Taylor Edwards that makes him that way?
You know, it's funny you say that. Like, I don't think anybody would consider a 300-pound-plus nose guard as sexy, but it's truly what it was, right? He just kind of understands the game. Plays with incredible intensity. He understands leverage. I think a lot of times as D linemen, one of the things you can be truly gifted is not only understand what you're doing, but what they're doing. And he kind of has a unique knack of playing the leverage game with often he's double teamed, right? And he kind of threw his leverage into the middle of the double team there and came out. It was a 2nd and 1, and he made a tackle for no gain, which put us into a 3rd and short, right? Just another good example of an unselfish player just doing his job. Really fun. He's a guy since last year. He's from the Columbus, Ohio area. He went to Northwestern, transferred into our place 3 years ago, has been a staple for us, and has really come into his own. I remember a day this past summer I needed to reach out to him. We were talking about some scheduling thing. He's on our leadership council, and I called him on a Sunday about 3 o'clock, and we were talking. He goes like, "Hey, Coach, I got to run. I got a hot yoga class here at 4 o'clock. I need to go to." I just started laughing because it kind of speaks volumes about, you know, the dedicated. This is something he did totally on his own. He sculpted his body, did some things that he wanted to take advantage of, and we're paying the dividends for it now in late September, and hopefully going to pay dividends for a while to come.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Olin. I do the pre and the post with him, and Olin grew up 3 houses down from Donovan Rayola, and that's his son, Dylan, who's the quarterback at Nebraska. So to have the Cruz boys, you've got both Josh and James on your team, to have them going against a kid, and that kid's a good quarterback.
Oh,
he's going to be good. And to have them going against a kid they've known since they were like toddlers, that was really thrilling for the two fathers, for the you know, their sons. And he talked about it on the pregame, and it was I got a real kick out of just hearing what he had to say about it, because I know he's, you know, as proud as could be with his boys.
And as you know, Olin can get a little feisty, and so he's definitely passed that on to his son. So it was interesting. I knew our guys were excited to play, so I actually grabbed Josh and James during the course of the week, and I said, "Listen, I knew the history with the Raiolas. Actually, their O-line coach was a player at Wisconsin. Their uncle was at Wisconsin when I was there, and I've known him for a long time. And sometimes you can make the battles within the battles too much, right, and it can get overwhelming. I would tell you Josh Cruz was very excited to play that game. There was a play I showed the team on Saturday where he took the nose, doubled him back, threw him on his back, and then normally – Josh would kind of jump on it and make a little statement afterwards, but he played with restraint and played very, very calmly in the moment where he had had success. And just spoke volumes than James. You know, I would say James is playing with a cast on his hand, and is playing so good for us on special teams and linebacker. There's so many great stories on our team, and those stories don't just come about by chance, right? Like, as right. the case with those guys, that they're raised in a great environment. Mom and Dad did a hell of a job to get them where they are. We have so many kids that have put themselves in positions. You know, our quarterback, Luke Altmaier, you know, grew up in an environment. His dad was a head doctor at Mississippi State in Starkville, Mississippi. He's been around college football his whole life, and he's dreamed of this moment, and now he's just capitalizing on a big stage. So very excited for a lot of our guys in our program.
So, Coach, you're back in the top 20. You're at 19. You're no stranger to that kind of success and how to handle it. Maybe some of your players might be. What's the message this week after a big win? You've got to go out on another tough environment. What is the overwhelming message that you have to have your players understand how to handle success this week?
You know, it's for me as a head coach, you always look for these little indicators, right? Little things to tell you many things. It sounds so funny, but we got off the buses on Saturday or Friday night. We go to the airplane, we hop on it, and lo and behold, they tell us that Champaign was fogged in and we were going to, you know, be on a 4-hour weather delay. So here it's Friday night. You're excited to play the game and win, but now we got a several-hour delay. Didn't get back to Champaign here until about 4 or 5 in the morning, but I was going through video clips, going through social media, and one of our best players through these first four games has been Xavier Scott, a kid from West Palm Beach, Florida. It sounds like a joke, but his high school coach was a guy by the name of Jack Daniels, a good buddy of mine, that reached out and said, hey, you need to take a look at this guy, and he's come in. He started his first game at Michigan, played his tail off 3 years ago, and now he's playing at a high level for us. Thorpe Award was in town to watch us play against Lincoln, and asked, but Xavier, after the game, and goes up to a TV camera that was in his face, and most guys write like a W or, you know, something, and he wrote 1-0. And what that tells me is they're hearing what we're saying. Like, no matter what we're doing, I know the outside world thinks we're 4-0, but all we're doing this week is trying to get ourselves in a position to go 1-0 against a really good football team at Tate College, right? So our focus has been focused on the present. Everybody else will take you where you want to go or where they want to go. What we need to do is stay focused on Penn State. So today is Tuesday. It's a very, very important day. We practice early downs. We practice our coverage units. We do a lot of basic install for the game this weekend, and that's where their focus needs to be.
Coach, thanks a ton. Thanks for jumping on. We're following it, and we're really proud of what the job you're doing. It's been fun to watch.
Good luck Saturday.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. ILL.
ILLINI. That's it. I know the answer.
Good stuff.
Yeah, great stuff.
Good start for Brett Bielema and the Illini.
Excellent. I mean, really fun.
He was in here this summer. We talked about the need to get off to a good start, and he did just that. They're in a position to be one of the big surprises in the Big Ten this
year. They're 18.5 point dogs.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, if that doesn't fire you up, what does?
Yeah.
And it's college football, man. So, you know.
College football.
Hey, we've seen some wild results already.
I love it.
Mully and Haw, we've got Coach Wanstead in the wings on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Dave Wanstead, Bears head coach for six seasons.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
He has the greatest mustache you've ever seen.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause. The mustache.
Why don't you hang it out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score?
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you very much.
Dave Wanstead.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to have Coach Wanstead with us. And he is here this morning. Dave, good morning. How are you doing? What do you think?
I'm trying to shake the weekend, guys.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's rough.
That was rough. And I know how Flus and the coaches feel. And, you know, the players always bounce back quicker than coaches. But, you know, our fans, I mean, that was a rough one with the expectations, I think, that everybody had. And
yeah. They rushed for 63 yards, Dave.
63 yards. Was that the most disappointing part of it?
Oh, 100%. And I was all over this game, and not just with the statistics, not just that they were the worst you know, they had given up 250 yards to two of the three teams they played running the ball against them. Yeah, that makes you, you know, get excited. But more so, just the fact that we haven't run the ball this season. And I kept saying to myself, this is the time that we're going to come out and we are going to stamp and we're going to say who we are as an offense. And that was the biggest thing that I was waiting on is, you know, you can say what you want, guys, okay? Run Luke Getsy and that whole crew out of town. But I talk to people in the NFL every week. And last year, if you were playing the Bears, you know what they said? Bring your mouthpiece. Because these guys are going to run the ball and hit us in the mouth. So, you know, it wasn't good enough. But my point is, we kind of knew who we were.
Okay.
Right now, I'm kind of a little bit confused. And well, you guys know I'm on board with Flus all the way. I'm going to ride this thing to the end. But boy, that was disappointing.
Well, though, what you're saying, though, is that it's because of a lack of emphasis, not ability. That's what you're suggesting there.
That's what when it comes to the run game, that's exactly what I'm saying. Now, I charted this thing. They ran a lead with Komet leading. They ran a belly play. They ran a toss. They ran five different styles of run. I'm not even going to talk about the option. They ran five different runs, okay, guys? And so they tried them all early. And, you know, Mercedes Lewis, I was telling everybody in my mind, we're going to see Mercedes Lewis. We're going to see Herbert. We're going to see Roshan, and here we go. Komet is the fullback. Move him around, and let's go pound these guys and give Caleb a chance to throw some play-action passes. That was what I was expecting, and that was what was so disappointing to me, you know, we just couldn't make it happen. And you put, hey, Herbert's not maybe a great back. I get that, okay? But let me tell you something. The guy's had, he averaged over 5 yards a carry last year in the preseason combined for the Bears. And I've coached, I've been very fortunate, very blessed. You know, the Ricky Williams, Emmett Smith. I played with Tony Dorsett, Coach LeSean McCoy. Great running backs need to get lathered up. It's really tough to stick them in there. And when their legs aren't loose, they haven't been hit and say, okay, you're the guy now. You know, and it's so we stick.
So you're saying don't bring a guy in on the 1 yard line.
Well, that's tough. I mean, people are going to criticize him and say they shouldn't have put Herbert in there. You know, he needs a half a dozen carries to get going, in my opinion. At least the few backs that I've been around have been pretty decent backs.
When you say don't ask you about the option, it makes me want to ask you about the option.
Yeah.
Help us understand that one, Dave.
Two thoughts, okay? And this is just my experience from when I started coaching with Johnny Majors, Jackie Sherrill, Jimmy Johnson, way back. When we were an option team, we would run the split back veer option. So I know a little bit about the option. And we kind of had a golden rule that we didn't want to run the option inside the 20. And the closer you get to the goal line, the tougher it is. Why? Because when you run it upfield, think about running it at the 50, where now the linebackers are playing run and pass. Your safeties are playing run and pass, right? Everybody, David, you played safety. Mm-hmm. Now you get down inside the 20,
yeah.
And those safeties, everybody's closer to the line of scrimmage. It's very difficult to say the safety won't be involved in a play or the linebacker won't be involved in a play. They don't have to cover as much ground. That's why we would stay away from the option. And you know what that told me, though, and I'll shut up on this. When they ran that play, that told me that Flus probably said, and I've been there, I want to go for it. Okay, bang, we're going for it. Now we got to come to the offense, and what do we like? What play do we like?
What's your favorite play?
And exactly right. And he's on the phone with a line coach who I think is really outstanding. He's getting a bad rap out of this deal. And we come up with an option. That tells me this, and I'm done. That they had no confidence in running the ISO, the lead, the belly, whatever you want to run inside and knock people off the ball, quarterback sneak, whatever, you pick a play that we're running between the tackles. When you run that play, that's telling me that you got no confidence doing that.
This segment of Dave Wants is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business.
All right, when we come back from the break, we'll hear Flusie explain why that was the good play. And if the reef, the look had been better, that would have worked. We'll ask Dave about that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.